it's one thing to show up at a place and then kind of just look at restaurants and, or like, you know, eat some food and look at buildings and go to museums and stuff. And it's a whole nother level of travel to make friends in a place and like really learn like what the culture is like, not just like through a tour bus window, you know, like getting down and like meeting people and learning what makes them tick and what their life is like and just bonding over common bond of hockey.
Welcome to Jump Podcast. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and experience the world outside your comfort zone and to do big, courageous things with your one life. Let this show be a source of advice and inspiration, and remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. This episode is supported by the Travel Gear and Adventure Show, where I will be speaking this June 2026 in Salt Lake City, Utah, by Osprey, my go-to luggage brand for everything since 2015, and by Oboz Footwear, my feet's ride-or-die adventure shoe brand. So stay tuned for more from them. And of course, we're supported by Jump Adventures and our own collection of epic adventure itineraries to Patagonia and beyond. Let us send you on your dream adventure. You can find out more and browse trips at jumpadventures.com. Okay, I am pretty stoked to get into our subject for today, as it's a subject that I normally won't shut up about and I am entirely obsessed with, and that is ice hockey. But why, you might ask, are we going to talk about ice hockey on a travel podcast? And that's a great question. And this leans into the theme that we've sort of been exploring on the show in these last several episodes, which is niche travel. Like, we had a recent trail running episode with Alex and the cycling episode with Ryan, and even my recent solo episode about going to Scotland for a writing retreat. So there are so many reasons that we have to travel, and it comes down to just asking yourself what is important to you and what is going to get you out the door. And today we have my friend and globally esteemed ice hockey coach Pete Kamen with us to dig into yet another personal and worthy reason to travel the world. And Pete has traveled the world with his family along for much of the time as a highly sought after ice hockey coach. So Pete, I feel like this has been a long time coming, and I'm so glad we're finally sitting down to have this conversation. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jackie. I appreciate it. Yeah, we've been talking traveling and podcasting and things for years, so it's great to finally make this happen, and I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, of course. I just have always found what you do so fascinating. And I mean, of course, as a traveler myself and as a newly obsessed ice hockey player, I am thinking about, you know, one day, where am I going to go to play hockey? Like, where am I going to pick a international tournament, you know? And this is something that you do as your job, traveling for hockey. And so I've just been very much looking forward to this and learning more about your story and how you even got to this point. So maybe we'll start with that. Before we get into the hockey and travel part, why don't you introduce yourself and just give us a little bit of backstory about who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it, Jackie. Like you said, I'm Pete Kamen. I coach hockey for a living, and it wasn't always that case, but it's just hockey's been a part of my life since I could walk, and it's something I'm very passionate about and I love. And no matter where I've gone, it's always been there. So I grew up, I was born in Minneapolis, you know, like a lot of hockey players, and I grew up most of my life playing in Chicago, and family moved around a little bit, spent some time in California, and then went to and played hockey all the way through. And so that was kind of as we were moving around, and that was my vehicle to make friends at the new places and, you know, bond with the teammates and just kind of go from there. So then I was fortunate enough to play in college at the ACHA level at Miami University in Ohio. And then kind of went from there, and then found myself in Montana here in Bozeman after school. And what was supposed to be just a couple of months ended up now I'm over 20 years here. And put the roots down here in Bozeman, and like I said, hockey's been a consistent through the whole time. And so when my playing days kind of ended in college, jumped into the, you know, the beer leagues, the adult hockey here in Bozeman. And then, one of the old Bozeman High School coach and the junior coach grabbed me after a game one time. He had seen my college helmet and asked if I wanted to coach the high school team with him. And, you know, that was a little over 20 years ago. And I had a little bit of coaching experience before then. But really that just got me hooked. So I coached the high school team for 2 years, and then got involved with a junior hockey team, and then moved overseas for a wild hockey coaching adventure for a year, which we can talk about. And then when I came back to the U.S., I've been coaching youth and college hockey ever since. So currently coaching little kids teams, the 10U team, the squirt team here in Bozeman, my son is on. And then I've got two younger boys, one in 6U and one in 8U, so helping them every now and then. And coaching the local college team, Montana State University, the Bobcats. So that's something I'm on year 8 with them right now. And then I have a company called Elevated Hockey that is camps and clinics and trainings and coaching sessions and things, which is I do throughout the U.S., primarily Montana, but a couple other states as well. And then that's kind of the vehicle that allows me to help and get on the ice and coach in different spots around the world. And then day-to-day work in hockey with Montana Amateur Hockey as their executive director. So it's my life is over the last couple of years have shifted to all hockey all the time.
Wow. Just a few things on your, on your schedule there. Wow. Okay, wait. So backing way up to something you said, why don't you play anymore? Did you get injured after college or something? Or what? Like, why are you only coaching?
I'm a better coach than a player, I think.
Oh.
So, I mean, I played in college at the ACHA level. It's like a club. I wasn't on scholarship. It wasn't NCAA D1. You know, and I just was never at a level that like professional hockey was an option for me. So after my college days were done, I just jumped into recreational hockey, like just playing in the beer leagues and keeping it involved. And, you know, like a lot of people who just love the game, just coaching was the avenue or the vehicle that allowed me to kind of stay competitive and give back to the game that I've been part of my whole life. And, game's been good to me. So it's, you know, got to give back a little bit too.
Sure. I mean, So I actually appreciate hearing that though, because it was super organic for you. It wasn't like, what I'm hearing is it's not like you had an idea of like, oh, this is what I want to do for my career. It's just something that you love, something that you're passionate about. It's been part of your life, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I my final semester in college, I graduated in 4.5 years. And so I didn't play that last semester. And I just joined as like a volunteer assistant coach for the hockey team and did some skating lessons for extra money, with kids on the side that last semester, and just really enjoyed it. And then kind of snowballed. And, I was 100% volunteer hockey guy for, I don't know, close to 15 years. And then it just kind of got to the point where people started asking, moms and dads were asking if I could give private lessons to their, 14-year-old. And that turned into small groups and eventually turned into weekend camps and eventually turned into week-long camps and turned in and just kind of snowballed. And that's where Elevated Hockey came from. And then, I was fortunate enough that hockey became all consuming. And eventually I used to work in sales and marketing and I stepped away from that career and about 3.5-4 years ago and just went into hockey for full time. And I was fortunate enough to get offered a full-time job with just managing all of hockey in Montana as the executive director. So I was able to jump at that opportunity and was very fortunate to have it. And so I'm still doing that plus the coaching on the side. So living and breathing hockey.
Wow. So it was only 3 or 4 years ago that you were able to let go of something else to be doing this full-time?
Yeah. So hockey was always the side thing. It was always kind of a side passion. And I started Elevated Hockey. There's a volunteer and coaching, and then the Elevated Hockey was camps and clinics. And that started about 9 years ago. So coming up on 10 years on that. But that's continued to keep growing and larger scale. The full time where I stepped away from the sales and marketing, the real job for what I actually wanted to do was about 3.5 years ago.
Cool. Gosh, that's so nice, right? Imagine the life that you want. Like, oh, I think you're living that right now. Just all hockey all the time. That sounds amazing. And I know that you have the three little ones that now you're bringing up, and even your wife, even Whit. Yep. Like,
yeah, Whitney's taking, it's my obsession has bled into her being forced to be obsessed with it too. And so, all three boys are playing.
She and I started at the same time. We started in the adult league here together. But I do remember, I'll share just one little story here. I remember being in your basement before it was finished. I think that's where you are now in your office, right? Yeah. Before it was finished, it had a faux ice floor and like the hockey wall. Yeah. And I remember thinking, I was down there practicing shooting with you and our buddy Justin. And I remember thinking like, man, I just learned more in 5 minutes from like you learning how to shoot than I have in probably all of my years playing hockey. Like, and definitely at that time, it just felt like, man, I wish I could do this more. I wish I could learn from you more. Those kids and all the people that you coach, they're really lucky to have you.
Oh, that's nice of you to say, but that's, yeah, I remember that. That was fun. Just down there, just ripping pucks and teaching mm-hmm. you how to lift and aim well, and
yeah.
just practicing. But that's, you know, that's what I love doing with the kids. And, you know, let's get heading to the rink after this call for got the college practice and then the kids practice after that. And
nice. Wow.
So it's, yeah, just living and breathing hockey these days.
Cool. I had a game last night, so it was a late game, so I was a little slow on the wake up this morning, but you know how it is.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. Yeah. Okay, so let's go back again, because you said that you got to have a year coaching overseas, and I imagine hearing that part of your story, that's probably something that was part of the impetus of wanting to travel more. Did that affect you? So yeah, tell us about that. What did that look like?
Yeah. So growing up, you know, we were fortunate. We didn't travel overseas ever. Right. And okay. So as a kid growing up with my family, we would travel in the U.S. a little bit. We would come out and visit family in Montana and things. But traveling just wasn't really on our radar. And it is kind of just because I was always playing hockey along with my brothers. But yeah, after I graduated from Miami from college, you know, I was about a year removed, maybe 2 years removed from school. And I was looking back and I was like, I always had this dream of playing pro hockey, and I was always like, I wish I could go play in Europe. I think that would be the coolest thing. And I wasn't quite at the level that if I would have tried to make it, it would have been extremely difficult. And I just never pursued that. Right. So I was looking back one day going, oh man, I wish I would have done that. And my biggest regret from school was that I didn't do a study abroad. And that was like starting to hang on me.
Heard that before.
Yeah. And I never did a study abroad because we were playing hockey and it stretches through both semesters. And I never wanted to take a semester off of hockey. And so I graduated school. That was like my one regret from college was that I didn't study abroad. And then it just happened really randomly. Like I got a call from my uncle and was like, hey, I there's this job coaching roller hockey in Africa, in Namibia. Like, would you be interested? And long story short, like this guy that was a friend of my uncle's was running medical missions in Namibia and bringing US doctors over there and nurses, and they would do their medical mission, but then they would also stay at a game lodge and do like a day or two of hunting. And the owner of the game lodge had a kid who played on the roller hockey team, and they were talking over beers about how all the other clubs were hiring Swedish and German and Canadian coaches, and their local club was getting like the gap was getting too big, and they wanted to bring in somebody who from out of country that knew hockey. And so the guys just said, well, we'll find you an American coach. And so the guy, as soon as he got back to the US, called up my uncle and was like, hey, you're from Minnesota, you got to know some hockey coaches, right? And so my uncle called me. He was like, yeah, my nephew coaches. And that's, it just kind of went from there. So I connected with the group over there in Namibia. And then a year later, I was there, sight unseen, just put everything I owned into a storage unit and hopped on a flight and lived there for a year.
Were you still solo at the time?
That's kind of a funny story too, because when all of that happened that I just explained, and when I had accepted the job, I was single and living in Big Sky and basically the ski bum more or less. But
okay.
It was about maybe 3 months before I left. So about 8 or 9 months after I'd already accepted, it was when I met Whitney, and she and I just started dating. And then I remember we both remember, there's one night where I was like, you know, this is going great, but like I am going on this job, like whether we're together or not, like this, I'm still going, like I'm not gonna can't like miss this opportunity to go coach in Africa, which is like a dream.
Sure. And
and I was like, well, maybe, you know, maybe we can figure out that you can come too. And so we ended up doing that. And so I went first just because it was kind of sight unseen, didn't even know if it was real or if it was safe or anything. And so I went, stayed back and worked and saved up some money. And then, she ended up joining for, the last 8 of the 12 months. And so we lived there, pretty early in us dating, but we moved to Africa together and lived in,
oh my gosh, that's so freaking cool.
Yeah. So basically it was through a boarding school for these kids. And so Whitney and I lived in a teacher's quarters of this tiny boarding school in Otjiwarongo, Namibia.
Oh my God. I don't know if I knew that about you. I mean, maybe I forgot, but that's such cool. Like, what a neat part of your story. So you were teaching, you were coaching the roller hockey team, but what did Whit do? What was she?
So she had no background in it, but she immediately was put into because she had a college degree, she was immediately was put into being a teacher. So she worked at the school.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, just
like a part-time high school business teacher.
So. What an experience for her too. And then you guys have that as like part of your foundation of your relationship. So much makes sense now that, I mean, I know that you travel so much. Before we got on this call, we were just saying like, you know, you got on and you were like, yeah, I just got back. I'm like, well, this is appropriate because usually when people see me, they're like, welcome home. Like, where were you just somewhere? You know, and it's similar for you. You're always going somewhere. But this makes so much more sense now that I know that you and Whitney started your relationship with a year in Namibia. I mean, that's a wild thing. And now you have a family and you're still doing hockey and you're still traveling a lot together.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we tried to. I mean, that was pretty early on in our I mean, we dated for a couple months and then dated like long distance for a couple months. And then we lived together, you know, traveling Africa and having a great experience. And then, so when we came back, it was kind of like reverse culture shock coming back after being gone for a full year. And especially in you know, Namibia and America are so different. And so we came back and we were like, you know, we want to keep traveling and we want to keep, so we kind of set ourselves like a rule in our relationship that we would try to get off U.S. soil at least once a year.
Okay.
And we've done that every year now, since we've been together, with the exception of the year in COVID. I was able to go overseas once, but as a family, we weren't able to.
Yeah.
It's morphed a little bit with kids. You know, we have three kids under the age of 10, and traveling with them is still, it's possible, but it's just different. It's a little different and there's some challenges, but at the same time, like, you know, growing up, I never traveled. Whitney traveled a little bit, but not that much. And, you know, like life here can be a little bit of a bubble. And so I think it's, you know, not only do I enjoy the travel part of my life, but it's also, I think it's kind of a cool gift to give to the kids, like a level of perspective globally that, you know, there's more going on than just where we live in Montana. Yeah. There's more going on than just the U.S. And it's kind of given a, you know, experiencing different cultures and meeting people and just seeing the world as a, you know, not just through a book or a video or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's like what I preach. So I love that. And I totally agree. And I think that you could apply that to anywhere. I mean, we definitely feel like where we live is a bubble, but I think that, you know, people listening out there, even if they're in cities or whatever, like we make our own bubbles, you know, and it's so important to get out and just remember that there's so much more out there. And it helps you also appreciate where you come from. And I mean, hopefully, you know, or you have bigger problems, but yeah, hopefully, yeah, getting out and coming back is super healthy and a great perspective to raise kids with. There are so many ways we could take this because what should we focus on? I actually really am more curious about the start of Elevated Hockey and how you were able to find the international experiences. Like, because I know you get invited. Mm-hmm. You get invited to do these things. And I know, like, for example, you were just recently teaching a women's, the first women's ice hockey team in which country was this?
It was in Kyrgyzstan.
I mean, come on. How do you get these? Like, tell us more about Elevated and those experiences.
Yeah. So there's, Elevated, the core of Elevated Hockey is camps and clinics and just on ice, off ice trainings for players of different levels, right? It doesn't really matter the age. We've got different sessions for different levels and things. And so that's anything from like a 5 or 6 year old to, you know, adults to professional hockey players to, you know, anybody in the middle. Right. So, but the kids is kind of the sweet spot. The kids, you know, age 6 to 16 is kind of the sweet spot, but, Elevated, it kind of just started that way. It was primarily working with like high end players, in Montana, which is kind of a non-traditional hockey area. And it really started with a core group of kids from around the state that were kind of at the top level of hockey in the state of Montana and helping them kind of keep progressing higher and then also opening doors for them. And so it's grown from that. But the international piece of that, I went coached in Namibia and that was well before Elevated ever started. But that part of me was like, man, if I could just do this all the time, I would love it. international hockey.
I know that feeling.
Like that's me geeking out, is like the mix of international hockey and travel and culture and food and all this stuff, with like hockey being the reason it all happens and like brings people together. And so that part of it was actually my wife, like Whitney and I and Brooks, our son, he was about 18 months old. The three of us were driving around Iceland together and in a camper van. And I had like an epiphany kind of where I started posting things on Instagram and started growing. And there's like two parts of this, but the Instagram, like following of the drills and different things I post, like started growing a little bit. And then we were sitting in, I don't even know how to pronounce the city, but Akureyri in Northern Iceland. And there's only three rinks in Iceland. One of them's in Akureyri, two are in Reykjavik. And I remember I was like sitting in the parking lot of, like I went to go check out the rink. And like I was sitting in the parking lot.
Of course you did.
Town. Yeah. And I was like, but I didn't know where to go. And like, I didn't know what to do in the town, or like, I was like, there's hockey players here and I don't know how to get in touch with them. And I want to, like, I want to have a beer with somebody and like, or like learn about it. And so I ended up, that then turned into like, I called some people I knew. One of my friends had an Icelandic junior hockey player on his team. And so he gave me his number. So I ended up like reaching out to this random Icelandic kid in Reykjavik a few days later. And I was like, hey man, you don't know me, but I'm friends with your old coach. Like, I'll buy you dinner and beers if you come join like my wife and I, and like, just, I just want to learn about Icelandic hockey. And so this kid Otley came and met me at a bar, and like I bought him a steak dinner, and like he just told me everything about hockey. And then at that point it was like, it kind of like connected the dots of like connecting people from different languages and cultures and everything, like through hockey. And so for that, I just kind of built it up through Instagram and kept growing and growing and kind of kept doing that. And so people would reach out to me and be like, hey, I wish I could come to your camp, or I really like this drill, or they would have a question. And so I'd do kind of like a back and forth, and then that would kind of grow to like, sometimes would be like, well, I'm, you know, I can come and I'd love to come and see what you guys have and just offer my service to you. So it kind of, that started that way. And then that's kind of like the main path. So it's like some of the travels I do is just through that. It's just connecting with people primarily through social media first, or some sort of an introduction, and then just kind of going along those lines. And then the other way is that I met a few folks a few years back that run a nonprofit out of Canada that looks at like expanding the game globally in non-traditional hockey areas, and just bringing all the benefits of that the game does to people. And and it's kind of a sports tourism nonprofit as well. And so they invited me to be a coach at one of their events. And then from there it's kind of taken off. So they're called the Friendship League. And so now they host 2 to 3 big events globally a year. And I've kind of been fortunate to fall in with them, and they invite me to come to these wild excursions and adventures and play some hockey, coach some hockey, and meet good people all over the world.
This is so cool. I'm so happy we're having this conversation, because it's just like, I get it. I do, because the thing that it was for me in the beginning was language. Like, that was what I was pursuing, right? But I've had so many conversations like this with people that they have their thing. It's just their thing, and it gets them out the door, and it gets them overseas, whatever it is, you know, that pursuit. And I love that it started so organically for you, and that it really came from just an interest, a curiosity to learn about what this looks like in another culture. We can do that with anything.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's really just what it was just reaching out to people at the beginning. And, you know, now I'm fortunate to have some people reach out to me about it, but still, like, some of my best adventures have really just been me kind of raising my hand to go and like asking people what their things are. Like, I had a, you know, wild adventure, hockey adventure in India, which was amazing. It was all because I just was, there's a whole long story, but which we can talk about if you want. It's kind of wild, but on my way home, I had like a 40-hour layover in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know anybody there, but I just jumped on Facebook and, you know, sent messages to a couple of the local associations. It was like, hey, this is who I am. I'm in town for a day and a half. And, you know, I'd love to jump out and coach a clinic for you guys if you have any ice. And if not, like, anybody wants to, I'll buy a, you know, buy a beer, and you're going to buy a coffee and talk hockey for a few minutes. And like, I think I reached out to 3 or 4 associations, and one wrote back, and they're like, we have practice tonight. Do you want to come? And so like, I just jumped on the ice and ran 2 hours of practice for kids in a shopping mall in Kuala Lumpur. And then that turned into like, you know, I went to dinner with them, and they're just awesome people, and we kept in touch. And then like a year and a half, 2 years later, I was back in Kuala Lumpur running a week-long camp with Whitney, like tons of kids. And like, I was like actually just on WhatsApp, like messaging the one of the main guys like 3 days ago. Like I sent him a pic of my little guy skating for the first time and stuff. So like, you know, just kind of a random encounter. And now 10 years later, we're still talking, or whatever, maybe not 10, but you know, it's been a while.
But you know, I would like to go back to the word you just said and delete that. It wasn't that random, because you put yourself out there. And I think there's a really, really good lesson to be heard in that. It's like, if anybody can have a 40-hour layover anywhere, right? What are you going to do with that? It's up to you, you know? Yeah. And if you decide to, I mean, look at what you've created out of a opportunity. Let's call it an opportunistic encounter. You know, you kind of took it by the reins and said, here's what I want to do at this time. You gave it how many, 3 or 4 emails, you know, or Facebook messages, whatever. But I think there's really something to be heard from those of us listening to you talk about this in the point of you putting yourself out there. And because you made all this happen, this wasn't just chance, you know, I mean, it's you taking the next step and the next step and the next step and just saying, this is what I love to do. Who else can I talk to about it? What else is there for me here? And it's led to these incredible things. And now you're doing it all full time and traveling the world and bringing your family and having friendships all over the place. And what the heck?
Well, it's pretty wild. I mean, I step back and I've just been very fortunate over the years. It's just hockey's, it's just what I do and that's what I love. And I've just been kind of in the mindset of trying to just raise my hand and say yes whenever mm-hmm. possible. And, you know, sometimes some random opportunities approach and sometimes I'm not qualified for them. And I would just, you know, submit my application or raise my hand and volunteer. And
yeah,
you know, I volunteered for a lot of things for a lot of years. And it kind of gave me the I don't know, maybe the some of the skill sets to just figure out, like, you know, a lot through USA Hockey. I mean, I did tons for the state camps and regional camps and national camps, and just kept raising my hand being like, I want to do these things, and mm-hmm. would just try to figure out a way and then just learn from people that are better at it than I am and mm-hmm. try to steal as much info as I could and put mm-hmm. it in my own tool bag, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. I mean, that's a model that, you know, doesn't apply to just hockey. That's a passion model, you know, a pursuing of passion model. I love how you've gone after this and made it your story and kind of directed it. So what are some of the places that you've gone? Because I know you've been to, I mean, you just mentioned Kyrgyzstan, but like, what countries have you been able to coach ice hockey in?
Yeah, so hockey, I was thinking about that before here. So it's been a few. I mean, I've been fortunate to travel a lot of places. And they're not all hockey-related travels, but I try to get a couple a year. But, you know, the first big one was Namibia, living there, coaching roller hockey for a year. I've also been in Africa. I've been to Nairobi, Kenya, and coached in Cape Town, South Africa. South America, I've coached in Mexico and I've coached in Peru. I'm hoping to do, you know, I'd love to go. Argentina's on my list. I haven't been there yet, but they have a huge thriving hockey culture down there.
I want to go with you there. Do you need an interpreter?
I know, right? Yeah, there's a big summer event down there in Ushuaia, and I'm hoping to be there in the next year or two. But yeah, I spent, you know, I was been to Malaysia twice. I think I put on 6 or 7 years worth of camps in Spain. I've been to China. I didn't really do much coaching, but it was a little hockey related. I did a world record game up in some coaching up in the Himalayas of India.
What world record?
It was the record for the highest game of, like, highest elevation for a hockey game ever played. And so I played in that. Yeah, that's cool. That was a big, long story. And it's just, again, just kind of, I was there for a wedding and just Googled ice hockey in India when I was there. And then I found this nonprofit that was putting on some things. And I reached out to him and I was like, this is who I am and this is what I do, my background. And got involved and just kind of volunteered some services for some marketing and grant writing for them. And then a year later, I was on a flight going to Ladakh to go skate in the Himalayas and be part of this game. And so it was pretty wild. Adventure there, and still keep in touch with those guys. The guys in India put on a big, I think it's next week actually, a big pond hockey tournament in Ladakh. Yeah, so, and then a couple other spots, like, you know, went to Australia, Kyrgyzstan, and I've got a couple trips. I've got a ticket booked for Taipei, Taiwan coming up here, and a few others in the works. So
We'll come right back to that. But first, let's thank the brands that support our show. Adventure doesn't start when the plane takes off or even when you hit the trailhead. It starts at the TGA show. The 2026 Travel Gear and Adventure Show in Salt Lake City, Utah is a true community gathering where anyone passionate about travel can feel inspired, connected, and empowered. The TGA show brings together travelers, adventurers, creators, brands, tourism boards, gear companies, and storytellers for exclusive access to new travel gear and innovations, masterclasses with world-class experts, destination and tourism board experiences, and hands-on workshops designed for both travel content creators and everyday adventurers. Not to mention the networking opportunities with filmmakers, podcasters, writers, and travel entrepreneurs, including myself. I will be speaking at this year's TGA show in Salt Lake City, Utah, and you can join me. Mark your calendar for June 23rd to 25th, 2026, and check out travelgoods.org to learn more and register. I'll see you there. Once upon a time in 2015, I set out with my trusty Osprey Fairview 55 travel pack and did not come back for, about 3 years. That entire time, I traveled the world nomadically with my Fairview 55. It was the first Osprey pack I fell in love with, and the Farpoint Fairview line has only gotten better over the years. And Osprey has just come out with a brand new updated version of the Farpoint and Fairview travel packs in 40 liter, 55, and 70. And they are exclusively available now at Osprey.com and at REI. My two favorite features of the Farpoint Fairview travel packs are that they open like a suitcase, so much room for activities and packing cubes, and that they have detachable day packs built into the 55 and 70. These packs all include Blue Sign approved 100% recycled materials and will hold up beautifully for weeks or, if you're like me, months and months of travel. And if you need more space, they pair gloriously with the Transporter Wheeled Duffel, which is my go-to for absolutely everything now. Can't stop, won't stop. I love it. Find the new Farpoint and Fairview travel packs, plus all the travel packing accessories you need, plus the beautiful Transporter Wheeled Duffels, and join me in my adventure packing bliss at Osprey.com. Hiking and hitting the trails is a year-round adventure opportunity, even in the snow. It just means you need the right gear, and no one knows this better than Oboz Footwear, because they hail from the often cold and snowy mountains of Bozeman, Montana. I once took a pair of waterproof insulated Oboz boots on a winter trip to Canada where I went snowmobiling, dog sledding, ice fishing, ski hawking, that's a special thing in Quebec, snowshoeing, and fat tire biking, and I did it all in my one pair of Oboz adventure boots. It was the easiest shoe packing solution I've ever experienced on a trip, and my feet were warm and dry and so comfortable the entire time. I want this kind of winter adventure success for you and your feet too. So check out Oboz Footwear's full line of insulated, rugged hikers and winter boots that will keep your feet happy from town to trail. Oh, and remember that every pair of footwear you get from Oboz helps plant trees. Learn more at obozfootwear.com/lovehiking. And thank you, wherever you are, for listening to the show and supporting these brands that help make it possible.
Just trying to get out and about.
So cool. And I'm also hearing that a lot of this is long game, a very long game for you. I mean, I think there are some things you've been able to do as you're traveling kind of on the spot that starts with a conversation. But case in point of, you know, putting the time in and reaping the rewards eventually is a lot of these conversations have led to bigger things for you. I mean, multiple times over this conversation, you've said it started with, you know, you reaching out when you were in a place and then a year later you were on a plane. I think that speaks volumes for, you know, just having the, the initial courage and again, I'll use the word curiosity to just see what's there, to see what's going on, to connect with people.
Yeah. I mean, I think those two are exactly it. I mean, everywhere I'm going, I'm always curious what the hockey scene is like there, like mm-hmm. what's working, what's not working, what advantages or disadvantages or challenges might that community have, whether it's, you know, whether it's in the US or other countries or whatever. So that, you know, and there's things to be learned from seeing like, oh, these guys do it really well here, or, you know, these have the same challenges that we are seeing right now. Like, how do they get over it? So I think, you know, I'm always curious to see what hockey is like in every community I go to and country I'm fortunate to travel to. And then, and then just the connection, like I said, that's for me is awesome. Like it's one thing to show up at a place and then kind of just look at restaurants and, or like, you know, eat some food and look at buildings and go to museums and stuff. And it's a whole nother level of travel to make friends in a place and like really learn like what the culture's like, not just like through a tour bus window, you know, like getting down and like meeting people and learning what makes them tick and what their life is like and just bonding over common bond of hockey. And so that's been a cool experience for me. And like, that's one of my favorite parts. And then keeping in touch with them afterwards, you know, like I wrote up a practice plan for, you know, a friend I met in Vietnam when I was there. And like, he reached out and was like, can you help me with this? I'm doing this practice. We want to work on this, but I'm not sure what to do. And I was like, all right, let's hop on a Zoom call and like, let's draw practice together. And so like, it's cool because it's not like a one-off thing. Like I stay in touch with a lot of these folks and it's cool seeing what they do.
Yeah. Also, I want to get into some of the things that you've learned, not so much like technical hockey related, but before that, I want to mention I think it was a reel I just recently saw on your Instagram where you were using Google Translate to even communicate with the team because you didn't share a language. And we haven't talked about language yet in this because I'm sure there's been plenty of barriers when it comes to language because you've been in all these other countries that speak all these different languages. But there is so much that can be communicated on the ice with through body language and whatever it is. I mean, having that common ground, I think, is super powerful. And then language becomes like almost like a second thing. But how has that been?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a challenge. I mean, it like you said, like a lot of times you can speak about whatever the drill is or whatever you're doing, and then you can show it on a board, like a coaching board, drawing it up, the X's and O's, and then you can demo it. And so invariably, one of those three ways is going to resonate with somebody. And a lot of times the demoing is the most powerful, especially if there's a language gap. But you know, most of my clinics have been abroad is usually pretty quickly somebody that speaks English is looped into the conversation, a local. Mm-hmm. And so you typically there's a translator. Sometimes, you know, like when I would coach in Spain, I'd say something and then the gentleman that was translating would put it in Spanish. And then I had a second translator that put it in Portuguese. So it's like the longest practice ever because we have to translate everything twice. But like the one we just did in Kyrgyzstan, it was, we had a translator for one of the days, but he wasn't available for the rest, like the other practice. And so I was just, you know, like their coach and all the young women that were playing, like one of them spoke English like a little bit, but not enough to really fully translate. And I don't speak Russian. So like, yeah, I just ripped out my phone and put on Google Translate and I would I would say what I had to say. And then she would read it and say it to the group. And that's how we did back and forth. And like, if there was questions then we just leaned on technology and made it work. And we had great conversations with, you know, I sat with the coach and talked about things for a long time and, you know, sharing videos back and forth. But like, I mean, he didn't speak a word of English and I didn't speak a word of Russian. And, you know, we sat for like over an hour just talking hockey.
Wow. That's so cool. Yay for technology most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time. Yeah. But the Translate apps help a lot. It kind of lowers that barrier to, you know, it's like a crutch in a good way too, where I'm like, I know I can also like just pull out the Google lens and translate it to something else if I need to, or, you know, if I need help from somebody, it makes it pretty easy to get around that way.
Yeah. So hockey technique aside, because I think most people out there probably haven't played hockey before. If they're listening to this, I don't know. You never know. But what do you think are some of the bigger things that you have taken away from, because I know that as a coach, you're there to teach, but I feel like the people who are trying to teach also end up taking more home with us sometimes than we feel like we've given, you know, I mean, these are such learning experiences for everybody. And so I'm curious, what are some of the top things that you've learned over the course of coming together over hockey internationally in your time as a coach?
Yeah, I think, you know, with the people I connect with overseas, it's, you know, hockey's hockey and it kind of, it's the common thread through all of them. But, you know, I think that the thing that's common through all these people is a real passion and really like self-sacrifice for the game they love. And also like a lot of times it's involved with like their kids. It's like their kids are into it, so they're going to do anything to make it happen for their kids, right? So there's a lot of good people involved in these games, like they're volunteers just like they are here in the States, and they're giving up their time and resources and energy to make the game better for those kids that are involved. And, you know, the lessons that are learned are the same about like teamwork and self-sacrifice and dedication and hard work and, you know, accountability and all those things. That those kids, doesn't matter if they're on the ice in Asia or in the US, it's the same lessons are learned the same way. But, mm-hmm. you know, I see a lot of the players, they see a lot of the same challenges that we do. And so that's always been a big thing for me, is just like working with these programs to like see how they've overcome their challenges and see if that knowledge can help either myself or people I work with back home or other countries that I end up going to. And vice versa, like lending advice to other people. So like seeing how they overcome those challenges. And the biggest thing too, the biggest takeaway I hit all the time is like, it's such a humbling experience to go and travel and to really see the sacrifices that some people make for the game that they love. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to just kind of grow up with a rink right down the street from me and skate whenever I really wanted to. And you see what, you know, the hurdles people go over and go through to make it happen in different parts of the world where it's maybe not as common. And it's kind of humbling, you know, like you think how you look back at kind of how lucky we, you know, I might be in my life of, you know, access to equipment and access to ice and access to games and teams to play against and referees. And some, you go to some of these places and like some of the folks are trying to figure out how to put food on the table for tomorrow, and let alone like, can they buy a new stick or something or afford ice time for practice? And, you know, those experiences are really humbling for me, and just kind of like gives perspective on bigger picture of like, these people are sacrificing a lot more than like the kids I coach back home to make it happen. And it kind of like puts things in perspective sometimes. Like sometimes the problems you deal with on your own home team or your own rink sometimes don't seem as bad when you compare that to, you know, a kid in Nairobi trying to figure out how to pay for a bus ticket to get to the rink.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
That's big stuff. But that's, and I think that applies. I mean, I understand, like I can relate, not in a hockey sense, but just as a traveler, you know, and I think that bringing that home and not letting it go, you know, keeping it, because that's up to us. I mean, when you go have this experience and then you come back and everything's still the same, you got to keep that in the forefront and even share it and tell your stories and keep it real, to keep it kind of alive and not just let it be a thing that happened once, but something that kind of stays with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every one of these trips that I go and do is definitely becomes like a part of what I do. And I take some things away from all of them and I try to share as much as I can. I mean, I'm a pretty open book. I don't hide that I'm going to do these things. And I highly encourage so many people to get out and do that too. I mean, I talk to people in the hockey community all the time about getting their, you know, getting on a flight and going somewhere, or how, you know, how to, cause I get asked that sometimes, like, how do these things happen? And then, you know, I walk through like, it's not, if you actually want to make it happen, it's not impossible. Like there's a lot of people looking for, you know, there's tournaments and there's camps and there's lots of ways to get involved with hockey across the globe. And the experience is not always just the hockey too. Like there's so much more to it. And that's why I keep doing it. And that's where like I brought one of my assistant coaches and former players on the Kyrgyzstan trip. And he had never been out of the US besides, he'd been to Canada. And all of a sudden he gets a passport, and a week later he's in Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan. Whoa, this is life I've never seen before. So
yeah,
I try to encourage everybody just to get out there and do it.
Probably because of the people too, right? I mean, it's all about the people. I think it's always about the people. I was going to ask you if you have any kind of memorable moments that stand out to you from these experiences overseas with people, because those are the ones that we tend to really, you know, let affect us and just remember. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that pop in, but I think the one that was probably the most memorable was I got asked to help with the Kenyan group of Kenyan national team players. And so I met them in Cape Town and did some practices and played some games and had a great tournament and got to know them really well. And then about 6 months later, they invited me to come to Nairobi to do it on their home rink. And so I did that and spent a little over a week in Nairobi, Kenya, and had a great experience. But what really stood out on that is that one of their top players named Otieno, pretty amazing young man. Like he grew up in one of the biggest slums of Nairobi, and you know, dirt floor. And I asked him if, like, myself and two other guys, like, if we could see his home. And he kind of was like we wanted to see where he grew up, and because he was talking about these challenges, and he had to, he wasn't comfortable bringing us to his house right away because he didn't feel it was safe for like a white guy to walk into his area. And so he had to like arrange it a couple days in advance with all the people around telling him that like, these are good people that are coming, like it's okay. And then, so we did, we spent the whole day and I met his mom and I met his, you know, all of his friends he grew up with. And we spent the whole day in his childhood neighborhood, and like his mom like cooked us a meal and we ate there, and like I bought some soccer balls and we played soccer with the kids there. But I saw like all the challenges that Otieno went through to like, you know, growing up with a little bit of education, like as much as he could through school. And but like to the point where his mom had never even seen him play. And he, I mean, he's in his 20s and he's the best player in the country, and his mom's never seen him skate before because she just couldn't get on a, like she couldn't afford a bus ticket to the rink. And and so, you know, it was just, you know, after spending a day with him, you know, it was in his friends and his family, and just seeing what he grew up, like the area he grew up in, it was so awesome to see the community and culture. But it was also amazing to see like where hockey took him, because he's traveled the world now with the Kenyan national team. And he always talked about how, you know, so, I mean, Otieno's a pretty cool guy. And same with a lot of the younger guys on the Kenyan team. Like, they've seen the world where, like, most people they've grown up with just have never left their home, you know. And yeah. So it was a pretty impactful day spent in Nairobi with them, and but it was pretty special getting to know the, you know, getting to see, really see, after coaching him for only a couple of weeks, right, but getting to know where, you know, more about him as a person. I'm like, this is where he came, this is why he works so hard and why he's so dedicated and why he's like, you know, it's pretty cool experience to see that and just get to, you know, meet everybody there from his neighborhood and play soccer with the kids. It was pretty, I don't know, it was a pretty emotional day. It was pretty impactful day. It was pretty cool connecting with all those folks.
I can imagine. I wish that could have been a documentary. Like, I want to watch it. Like, I want to be a fly on the wall. Like, I want to watch this. I think that maybe that could be your next thing. Like, bring a video crew. This is so cool. Just, I'm sure you have so many experiences like this, because everybody has a story, you know? And when you're going, I mean, I would have been so interested to learn more about the women that you just coached too, you know? And I think that's such a fascinating, what a glimpse, like what a privilege that you get to have, that you get to be in that position and see and learn that and actually go to those corners and meet those people and like sharing that story with us. Thank you for sharing that one, because that's amazing.
Well, it was a pretty cool, I mean, the Kenyan team is pretty great with their marketing and advertising. Like, I mean, if you just Google Kenya ice hockey, you're gonna find ice lions all over, and they sell jerseys to raise money for their ice, and they've had some film crews around them and doing some documentaries and things.
Yeah,
and
cool.
So those guys are really good about like marketing what they do to help offset the costs that are pretty high for them to do it. But yeah, it's the experiences like that are kind of what makes it all worth it. And it's not just shooting pucks or, you know, making turns. It's the same wherever you go for the most part, but it's all the other stuff just outside the ice that make it really cool. And
yeah,
that's, I had a story I was going to tell you. I'm drawing a blank on it, but yeah, there's been a couple pretty cool, you know, just meeting these folks and kind of seeing what they go through. It's pretty wild.
I really want you to do a documentary now. I want there to be a documentary on this. Like, someone should follow Pete around and do an elevated hockey documentary. Just go to like a few different countries and just create. I think that'd be so cool. Maybe somebody out there is going to hear that and think, I could do that. And so, well.
Yeah. Well, I know the Friendship League, which is the nonprofit that brings me to come. They're working on a small documentary with some of the Kenyan guys. So they're doing that. And so it's not, I'm in it, but I'm not focused on it. But
yeah. Well, I'm talking about you, Pete. I'm talking about you. like, cause yeah, you would be the bridge though, you know, like for that kind of documentary, you'd be the bridge for that gap to then connect our culture to that culture. And I just think that'd be neat. But anyway,
I'm all in, you know, documentary guy. I'll volunteer my services.
We'll just put that out to the universe via this episode. See what happens.
Right. I'm in. Count me in. But yeah, you mentioned the women in Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah.
So this is what I was just thinking of. So this was really unique because I got, like I said, I through the Translate app and just kind of hanging out. I got to talk to the coach a bunch. And so I don't know if all these details are exactly accurate or not, but it's just kind of what the story that was relayed to me was that, you know, Kyrgyzstan was under the Soviet Union until communism fell in 91. But during the Soviet Union control, they didn't have any ice rinks, and they just kind of said, like, you are not a hockey country, more or less. Like, there's other things that's going on here. And so hockey's really only, from my understanding, from what they told me, is hockey's only really been in Kyrgyzstan since like the mid-90s. And so it's still pretty early in its kind of path, development path. And so with that, initially there was like no women involved, no girls involved at all. It was all just like older guys learning how to play, younger kids learning how to play, some Russian transplants and expats and things. And then, but this group of young women, they're all between the ages of like 15 and 19. They were all from a community a few hour drive away from Bishkek up in the mountains in Karakol. And it sounded to me like, I'm not 100% sure how it worked, but the coach, I think, may have been one of the girls' dads, or else he's just a very involved community member. But he was a farmer, and he, in the winter up in the mountains, like there's no crops. So he would just flood his field and somehow got a hold of a bunch of skates and sticks. So like, and they just started playing, and it was like unstructured play that then turned into more play and play. And so that the whole thing was like this group of girls is the only girl. It's really the only women playing in, give or take, in I think it was the only girls team in Kyrgyzstan. And so like, this is the girl, like the future women's national team. Like that's kind of what they're working towards. And so, you know, some of the girls had only been skating for about a year or so. Some of them been skating for a lot longer than that. You know, and their equipment levels were all over, the skill levels all over the equipment, you know, like what they had for equipment was all over the place, but they all loved it. And they were all like smiling and having a good time. Mm-hmm. And they're all friends that like bonded over hockey and just play and practice in this flooded farmer's field in Karakol and drive to the big city Bishkek for this, like, I don't think it might have been their first ever tournament they'd played in. And it was like, you know, first getting practices, boards, glass, and so it was pretty, you know, so they played in the tournament against all the men's teams and had a great experience. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. You need more than a documentary. You need a whole series, because each one of these needs to be its own episode.
Yeah, I mean, they're always wild. I mean, I always feel like I come back and I never take enough pictures or videos. I always like forgetting all the little details and things. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of every adventure is a little unique in its own way.
Yeah, what a neat opportunity that you've kind of grabbed for yourself. It's been fun for me because these are two of my loves, travel and hockey, you know, and putting it together. But this is your life. It's so cool. I really do want to do an international tournament at some point.
They are fun. You should definitely sign up for them. I think you'd have a blast. There's a lot of, like, once you kind of dive into that world of international hockey, you find all the other crazy obsessed people like you or me are willing to fly around the world with their skates and hockey.
I know. I thought about that when you were telling the Kuala Lumpur story, that like you must have just had your gear with you because you hopped on the rink to coach a session. Like,
yeah. So, yeah. Well, so what I always do is I always bring my gear and I donate as much as I can. So a lot of times, like, I'll hit up a used sports store or get donations from people before I go, and I'll bring, and I'll kind of ask what they're looking for. So sometimes the donations are bigger than others, but I'll typically leave like my helmet and sticks and gloves and whatever other pads, but I always keep my skates. Like I'll bring other skates to donate, but I always keep travel with my skates. And so, yeah, a lot of those times, like if I've got a long layover or something, like, you know, so like the Kuala Lumpur one specifically, I was like, I have my skates here, but I don't, if you guys can give me a stick, I'll run practice. And yeah, you know, that's kind of how it usually does. But, lighter load, try one back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Good for you. I actually was going to ask that earlier and forgot. So I'm glad that you brought that up, that you take the opportunity to also donate and bring things that they might need.
Yeah. I mean, we try to, it depends. Every trip's a little different, and a lot of times it's just donating kids' gear. That seems to be the bigger draw. And, like when we went to India, it was, I think we donated a couple hundred sets of kids' gear and, wow. You know, but in the other, you know, some of them are just smaller, you know, but that's kind of, the Friendship League promotes that a lot. And, you know, so like when we're in Vietnam, you know, nobody has to donate anything, but you're encouraged to leave as much as you can behind. And 'cause it's a lot easier for you to you know, grab a new stick down the, you know, at the pro shop than it is for somebody that's living over there, and the shipping costs make it out of reach. So yeah, I try to leave as much as I can whenever we go.
And then you're taking so much home with you at the same time. I love it.
It's the thing, you know, leave a few shin pads or helmets and stuff, and you got room for, you know, souvenirs and whatever else.
Oh, yeah.
And all the cultural, you know, the, you know, filling up the soul a little bit with the experience.
Mm, I love this. Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories and, I don't know, taking us on a trip around the world with some skates. So fun. I can't wait to do that for real.
It's what I do. I love it, man. It's, I wish I could do it more often. You know, I'm fortunate to do the amount that I do, which is more than most, but it's something I would do full time if I ever had the opportunity to do it. So it's pretty, yeah.
Well, hey,
pretty amazing.
You never know. You're on the right track. So yeah. All right. If people want to learn more about Elevated Hockey, where can they find you and that and the Friendship League? We'll put that in the show notes too.
Yeah, please do. I mean, the Friendship League does great work all around the world, but, and I'm happy to be a part, you know, supporter of theirs and part of their process. But, you know, for me, Instagram and Facebook, Instagram is probably where I put most of my stuff out, is, at elevated hockey. All my camps and clinics, if kids ever want to skate with me, they're listed at elevatedhockey.com. And then Friendship League is, I believe it's at the Friendship League. But it's, they're a good group of people doing good things with hockey, grassroots level all over the world.
Sweet. We'll put all of that in the show notes for easy access for people. So cool. Well, thank you. And man, I wish you the best of luck going forward, continuing on with this worthy journey of yours. I love it. Thanks for the inspiration too.
Oh, well, you're too nice, Jackie. I appreciate it. It's this, you know, right back at you too. I love seeing all your adventures and your pushing people in the right direction to get out and, you know, push their own boundaries and explore the world. So it's a great thing. I appreciate the invite to come and talk hockey with you. And hopefully we'll be skating on the rink here sometime soon.
Yeah, for sure. See you on the ice probably later today or tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I'll be there in a few hours. That's right.
Love it. All right. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks, Jackie.